Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Three kinds of cheese: basil, organic walnuts, cucumbers, eggs, onions, and carrots. And then there's chocolate bars, cones, and gummy candies. This year, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has issued foodborne illness outbreak advisories for those foods. And as of today, there have been 25 investigations into potential outbreaks. 7 remain active. To some extent, we've become accustomed to the idea that what we eat could make us sick. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimates that foodborne diseases make 48 million people in the U.S. ill every year. But when that notion materializes into lived experiences close to home, and that's recently happened with an E. coli outbreak in St. Louis County and an outbreak of Shigella in Fairview Heights, food safety moves from "sure, that could happen" to "what can I do to keep from happening at all?" We have three guests today to talk us through those outbreaks and food safety in general. First, we have Monica Roth, Environmental Supervisor and Training Coordinator with St. Louis County Department of Health. Welcome, Monica.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Dr. Shefali Wolf, System Vice President of Quality and Safety at SSM Health. Dr. Wolf, hello.
Thank you for having us on.
And with us by phone is Food Safety Attorney Jory Lange. Jory is representing people who were sickened in both the St. Louis County E. coli outbreak and the Fairview Heights Shigella outbreak. Hello to you, Jory.
Thank you for having me on, Elaine.
Thank you all for joining us today. So, Monica, can you talk with us first about what happened in St. Louis County and how this E. coli outbreak first came to the attention of the St. Louis County Department of Health?
Well, we got contacted by hospitals because people were testing positive for E. coli. Mm-hmm. And it ended up that all of those people had been eating at Andre's on Telegraph. Mm-hmm. So we were notified that there was an outbreak going on. Several people had become ill. And we went to Andre's to do a routine inspection and ask them some questions about, you know, kind of how the food was served, if they had any sick employees, their hand washing practices, et cetera.
So it was from the hospitals that you were first?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
so
they had some positive stool samples that for E. coli.
Mm-hmm. And for you, Dr. Wolf, I mean, as you were at the hospital with SSM Health, were you seeing a large number of patients coming in with similar symptoms, or is this something that you were maybe hearing about from elsewhere?
Yeah, so what Monica describes is exactly the path that happens when we become aware of these foodborne outbreaks. We start to see an increase in patients who come into the hospital with nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, abdominal pain. And we don't always test, but when patients do come in sick enough to be hospitalized, we do test their stool. And if we see a clustering of E. coli or Shigella or Salmonella, those are all reportable to both the county and state Department of Health. Mm-hmm. And once the Department of Health has that information, they then partner with people like Monica and her teams to do a source investigation. Where could this have been coming from?
Right. What is a cluster, Dr. Wolf?
An increase in what would be normal. So, you know, we might see a little bit of seasonality around in the summertime, especially some increases in E. coli as people are barbecuing and maybe eating undercooked hamburger. Mm. But we wouldn't expect to see, you know, 5, 7, 10, 12 cases of Salmonella, Shigella in a given week or a 2-week period. That would be unusual.
So this is from the health side of things. And I think some of the time when we are thinking about outbreaks, we don't necessarily think about the people first. We think of it as a public health kind of emergency. Jory, you are representing clients in both cases in St. Louis County and in Fairview Heights, Illinois. What are some of the things that the people you are representing have been going through?
So this has been a really serious outbreak, both of these have, with the E. coli outbreak in St. Louis, and we're also now seeing people sick in St. Charles County and what we think is a related outbreak. We're seeing people who've been hospitalized. We're seeing children who've been hospitalized with HUS or hemolytic uremic syndrome, which is an acute type of kidney failure. And this has been very, very serious in St. Louis County.
And the kinds of stories that you're hearing from people close to where we're now broadcasting from in St. Louis, I mean, you've been working with clients all across the country. To what extent is what's happening here in St. Louis, for example, representative of what is happening in other places across the nation?
That's a good question. So we do see food poisoning all across the nation. You know, we think right now that the St. Louis cases are connected to a larger outbreak of E. coli that's affecting 10 different states. And the CDC has said in that outbreak that there are 75 reported cases. But one thing we also know from the CDC is that for every one reported case of E. coli at 157H7, statistically, there are about 26 other cases. Mm-hmm. So this national outbreak involving iceberg and romaine lettuce that we're hearing about, it's probably actually closer to 1,900 people who were sick in that when you do the math. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing the largest group of people sick in that in St. Louis, unfortunately. And
Right. That
probably just comes down to more of the contaminated lettuce was served and delivered to the St. Louis area, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wolf.
Yeah, so I think what Jory's saying really should be underscored is that I think there are a couple of things in what he's just said. A lot of times the symptoms of food poisoning can be really hard to distinguish from just a normal stomach bug. Like maybe I have the stomach flu, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. And for most people, they'll get better on their own. So mm-hmm. a lot of people don't seek medical treatment. And so Jory's point about these cases going underreported is very likely true.
Right.
And it's really when people start to get sick enough coming to the hospital, and people who have compromised immune systems, pregnant women, children, people at extremes of age, are going to be those who are most vulnerable to developing complications of these types of foodborne illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to underscore what Jory just said.
Yeah. And one of the families, Jory, you're representing, in fact, has had their child in the hospital for 20 days, receiving multiple rounds of dialysis and transfusions. So, I mean, thinking about children and then also elderly people, how vulnerable they are, you know, as populations, and then for it to hit this close to home is quite something. David on Facebook had written to us asking, how is a person supposed to know if they get sick from food poisoning like E. coli versus something like the stomach flu or other viruses at this time of year?
Dr. Wolf? And that's an excellent question. And I think for a lot of people, the symptoms are really difficult to distinguish. We encourage people to seek medical care. So either talk to their primary doc, show up to the emergency department or urgent care. If they have fever that goes on for more than 48 to 72 hours with severe abdominal pain, diarrhea that becomes bloody, or they're becoming dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they really should seek out medical care.
Okay.
And when they do, they will oftentimes have stool testing done, either a culture or some molecular test that will help the physicians taking care of them guide treatment.
Mm-hmm. So, Monica, I want to come back to you because you had talked about how the County Department of Health was notified by the hospitals and then the action that you took thereafter. I would imagine that for a business, especially a local business, to be hit with allegations of contaminated food, that is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
To what extent did the folks at Andre's Catering cooperate with you? And was there anything about the way that they dealt with you and your colleagues going in that sort of demonstrates that they were actually thinking about public health?
Well, they let us do our job, but they weren't very happy. You know, they were very defensive about, you know, you're here, mm-hmm. You're accusing us of this, and they just said, you know, it's not us, it's, you know, why are you blaming us? And so even though the owner let us do, you know, our inspection, He was kind of screaming and yelling and, you know, not very happy with us for being there.
Right, right. But ultimately, what you found is that the supply was a problem, right?
Yes. Yeah, and it eventually we did. But at first, we didn't know, mm-hmm. you know, where it was coming from. So walking in the door, we wanted to talk to them about, you know, have you had any sick employees? You know, what's your hand-washing policy? Stuff like that, because if a sick employee had come to work and didn't wash their hands properly, you know, that could have caused it. It ended up not being what caused it. Mm-hmm. But walking in the door, you know, we didn't know.
Right, right. And a spokesperson for Andre's Catering had actually sent a response for a request, that is, for a statement. And they said that from the onset of the St. Louis E. coli outbreak, our thoughts have been foremost for the safety and well-being of our customers and community. We continue to hope and pray that anyone who became ill recovers and requires no further medical treatment. We understand how important it is to combat foodborne illnesses. It's why our staff goes through rigorous training and has been ServSafe certified since 1980. We look forward to St. Louis County finishing its work and finding the source of our local outbreak. Jory, as you hear that, I mean, what is it that we know about the cause of the E. coli outbreak in St. Louis County? What is the latest on it?
So I think the latest is that this appears to be linked to a larger national outbreak of romaine lettuce and iceberg lettuce mix that we're seeing in 12 different states.
And Monica, how is it that something like E. coli gets into a supply of lettuce? Where does it get its start?
I don't know.
No.
that's something that's, you know, that's on a national level, and I don't know how that... how it gets into the food supply.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, once it's there...
And I can jump in and address that.
Sure.
You know, we don't know yet in this outbreak. That's something we hope to find through the investigation. But what we often see in these lettuce outbreaks is that it's, you know, lettuce that in the fields is being contaminated with animal feces.
That's right.
And we've seen lots of situations in the past where, you know, you've got these large fields growing lettuce, they're downstream from a cattle feeding operation upstream, and you get runoff from the cattle feeding operation into the canals, and that water's used to irrigate the lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen that in several E. coli outbreaks in the last few years. And again, we don't know exactly what's happened here, but that'll be part of the investigation to figure out how did our food get contaminated with E. coli.
We're talking food safety this hour and taking your questions. With me are infectious disease physician Dr. Shefali Wolf, St. Louis County Health Department Food Safety Inspector Monica Roth, and food safety attorney Jory Lange. Now, we have been asking you to call us with your questions and comments, and on that, we have Linda, who's calling from Baldwin. Linda, welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I think we may have lost Linda, but we'll be sure to get back to her. And we also want you to join the conversation, too. Linda had called us at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Please call with your questions about food safety. Now, before the break, Dr. Wolf, you were nodding your head as we were talking about E. coli, but there are other things that cause illness as well, right?
There are. Yeah, there are. And some of the, we do a little bit of detective work when we think about what could be the source of some of these infections. And the actual organism that we culture or find from molecular testing can help us in that detective work. So things like salmonella or campylobacter can come from poultry or undercooked eggs.
Mm-hmm.
We sometimes see shigella from undercooked red meat or outbreaks of Staph aureus, which cause illness pretty quickly after people have consumed a meal, 2 to 4 hours after a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that can be from people not washing their hands if you go out to a restaurant.
Right.
And
right.
So some of those clues can help us distinguish between just a normal stomach virus
mm-hmm.
and some of these foodborne infections.
Right, right. And the not washing of hands, that is something that the county Department of Health is investigating, right? Is
yes.
checking on, Monica. So, Monica, you had said earlier that you had been able to identify that the lettuce was part of the problem at Andre's Catering. Mm. What is it that happened thereafter? What happened to that lettuce?
So the Center of Disease Control at the county, they had interviewed the people that had become sick. And the way they found out that it was the salad, we didn't know that it was the lettuce, but they thought that it was the salad because everyone that became ill had eaten the salad. So that's how we narrowed it down to the salad. So then we went out to the restaurant and we at first we embargoed everything that was all the ingredients to the salad. And then the state of Missouri, their Bureau of Environmental Health Services, they were more interested in the lettuce. We went out there with the state, and they took a sample of the lettuce, and then the owner of the facility voluntarily destroyed the rest of the lettuce that wasn't taken for sampling. And the way they did that was they opened all the bags of the lettuce, put it into the dumpster, and then poured bleach on top. Mm-hmm. And us with the health department, we witnessed that because we didn't want anybody to come take it out of the dumpster.
Mm-hmm. And I believe that Linda is back with us now. Linda in Baldwin, thank you for calling us back. What is your question or comment?
Well, I would like verification of what I believe to be a fact. I do not ever hear the medical community, the health department, or the media mention this. I have been led to believe that E. coli is not only caught through, you know, eating contaminated food, but it is also contagious. For instance, you know, a mother and father could have eaten out and, you know, come down with E. coli, and then possibly their children or other family members could catch it from them. Is this true or is this not true?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the question. Dr. Wolf?
It wouldn't be common. It would be most... So E. coli, a couple of things. E. coli is a bacteria that we carry within our own intestinal tract. Mm-hmm. And so people can develop illness from E. coli. It's the most common cause of urinary tract infections, for example. So people can develop E. coli infections just from their own normal bacteria.
Right.
When we talk about foodborne related E. coli, it's typically spread through contaminated food.
Mm-hmm.
It's spread from stool to hand to person.
That's
typically what happens.
Okay.
So could there be possible spread between if people don't wash their hands? Maybe. But the most common way is going to be from undercooked food if we're talking about E. coli related to foodborne illness.
Mm-hmm. Right. What questions do you have about preparing food safely? Or maybe you've seen someone in their own kitchen doing things that you are questioning? Reach us at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Now, something that is contagious is Shigella, right? And Shigella was the culprit of an outbreak that happened in Fairview Heights just a few months ago. Jory, can you talk with us about what happened there and how it is different from what has been occurring in St. Louis County?
Yeah, so there was a massive outbreak of Shigella in St. Clair County, just down the road from St. Louis, a couple of months ago. We represent over 300 people who got sick in that outbreak. And we know that, you know, over a dozen people were hospitalized in that outbreak. And then one really concerning thing we've seen in that Shigella outbreak is people with long-term complications like reactive arthritis or irritable bowel syndrome, both of which are among the known complications of food poisoning. They're rare, but they can happen. So unfortunately, in the Longhorn Steakhouse Shigella outbreak, we're seeing people with lifelong complications, it's looking like.
Mm-hmm. And a spokesman for Longhorn Steakhouse sent this in. The health and safety of our guests and team members is our top priority, which is why we voluntarily closed our restaurant for 2 full weeks and cooperated with the health department's investigation. And they did say that at that time, Longhorn Steakhouse, they discarded all of the food items, and that included food prep utensils, salt and pepper shakers, condiment bottles, bread boards. They had a cleaning company come in to do a 2-day disinfection of the restaurant, and that thereafter, restaurant workers were not allowed to enter the building until they had 2 consecutive negative tests for Shigella. And to date, none of those employees have tested positive, and that they'd also held training sessions on food safety and sanitation practices. The Longhorn Steakhouse spokesperson also said that to date, no additional cases have been reported to the health department, and a source for the outbreak has not being identified. Monica, does that sound sufficient to you?
Yes. If the Shigella had come from, you know, an employee that maybe didn't wash their hands properly and, you know, handled the food without wearing gloves or using tongs, you know, if they tested negative for the Shigella, then I don't imagine there's going to be any more spread of that disease.
Mm-hmm. From what you've seen, I mean, do you think that people would be surprised about what you have seen during inspections at restaurant kitchens?
I've seen some gross stuff that people probably wouldn't want to know about.
Okay. Well, I mean, what should we know about? What are some of the things that we can be looking out for so that what we get is a meal and not an illness?
Well, they can look on our website and see what we found in, during the inspection.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way to be informed before you walk into a restaurant is look and see what we saw when we did the inspection.
Okay, so do that check first.
Yes.
Once you're in a restaurant, what are some of the signs that maybe you should consider dining somewhere else?
If it's dirty, you know.
Uh-huh. Which parts?
I mean, you're not going to see the kitchen as a customer usually.
Mm-hmm.
So if, you know, maybe they're not wiping the tables off or the bathrooms aren't having any attention given to them, mm-hmm. overflowing trash, stuff like that.
How has your job affected the way that you make decisions about how and where you eat?
Well, there's some places I won't eat at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's others that I will eat at, though.
Yeah.
So I still eat out. I'm just more choosy about where I go and don't go.
Right. And there is a grading system, isn't there?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So the score that you get when we do the routine inspection, you start out with a score, but then when they make corrections, they get some of the points back. So the corrected score is what you see on the door. So they may have, you know, an A sticker or a B sticker. If they have a C, then we close them. So you're not going to see mm-hmm. a lot of C stickers without, you know, a closure sign.
Right.
But the A, you know, that's your better grade. If they have a B, that's not so good because mm-hmm. that's what they've corrected to. They may have started out with something lower and then they've corrected to a B. So I don't recommend, you know, going there if they've got a B.
So if a restaurant has received a low grade,
mm-hmm.
is there a certain period of time that they're given to, you know, clean up their act, so to speak, so that they can get a higher grade? And I mean, how often do we see that those eateries that are receiving low grades, like, they just need to close?
Well, we don't close them unless they don't correct up from a C. If they're not being able to get any of those points back from a C, then we close them. Or if they have repeated violations and we have a process that they go through, where if they just don't get those violations corrected, we close them for 60 days and mm-hmm. they have to reapply for their permit. Luckily, that doesn't happen very often.
Mm-hmm.
If we degrade them to a B, usually we give them 10 days to make the corrections. And then when we come back for the 10-day follow-up, if those corrections have been made, then we give them their points back and then they can get their A back.
Mm-hmm. Part of the reason we're talking about this today is that we are in the midst of a season where people are doing a lot of eating, whether it's eating out or maybe there are potlucks and things going on. We do have a question that's come in from Brian about leftovers, maybe some of the leftovers you bring home from one of those events. Brian asks, how long can someone reheat and eat leftovers? I hear that rice is different. Dr. Wolf?
I'm scratching my head a little bit. I can't comment about rice, mm-hmm. but I think in general, leftovers should be promptly stored.
Mm-hmm.
So don't leave them out on your counter for, you know, 2 to 6 hours or something. Don't leave them out overnight and then assume that they're safe the next morning. Promptly store them. Try to keep meat away from produce.
Mm-hmm.
In general, wash everything before you eat it. So even pre-packaged lettuce,
right,
that might be tempting to just put into a salad bowl, mm-hmm. wash it.
Okay. I think that's a big one people ask about. Jory, how about for you?
Well, the lettuce point is a good one. You'd be surprised how many outbreaks of E. coli we see with supposedly pre-washed lettuce. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot of situations where people are trying to, you know, eat a salad and eat something healthy, and it ends up with E. coli in it. you know, 20 years ago, most of the E. coli we saw was in ground beef. And the beef industry, while not perfect, has gotten much, much better at sort of policing itself and fixing that problem. So we see less E. coli in ground beef than we did before. And if you properly cook your burger, it will kill anything in it. You know, the problem, we're really seeing a lot of E. coli now in lettuce and vegetables, things that we don't wash and don't cook.
We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation about food safety. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. I'm Eileen Cha. Let's return to our conversation about food safety with infectious disease physician Dr. Shefali Wolf, St. Louis County Health Department Food Safety Inspector Monica Roth, and food safety attorney Jory Lang. We've been asking for your calls and your emails, and one of the things that we received came from Joey on Instagram. Joey asked or commented, "Our food supply is riddled with chemicals and poor management. The people working in the industry are overworked and underpaid. Couple that with food corporations cutting safety standards and protocols to eke out more profit. It's a dangerous situation." We also heard from Angela, who asks on Instagram, "I would love to know how often food is inspected in the packing and shipping process." So to that question, Monica, do you have any sense of that?
We don't inspect, you know, the packing and shipping facilities. That's either the FDA or the state of Missouri.
Right.
So I don't know the answer to that.
Right. Jory, I believe you have some insight into this.
Well, there are lots of state and federal inspections, but and we think that the state and federal inspections are doing the very best job they can, but we do still see a lot of food poisoning slip through the cracks. You know, every one of these national outbreaks that you're seeing are a concern. And I think that there, unfortunately, food is a lot scarier than most people realize until something happens to them or someone in their family.
Right. Marion St. Charles wrote us, "My daughter almost died from the outbreak that struck 20 plus years ago, prior to the Jack in the Box outbreak. We thought she was urinating, but she was actually passing liquid through her bowels. We kept giving her liquids to hydrate her, but she was drowning from all the liquid. The doctor said she had salmonella and it would pass, but she became lethargic. So we took her to the ER, where she was diagnosed with HUS, which is something that you mentioned earlier, Dr. Wolf. Mary continues, "She got the poisoning from airplane food. I got her a child's meal, no burger. There was cross-contamination from someone who packed her meal. Fortunately, she recovered, but it's a terrifying experience." So, Jory, with the people that you're representing, I mean, unfortunately, this story is probably not one that sounds unfamiliar. I mean, in the case of the people you are representing, do they decide to pursue litigation because what they've experienced is so severe?
Yeah, I think so. And really, the human story of this is a, you know, food poisoning is a terrifying thing when it strikes a family, particularly when it's striking a child. And as Dr. Wolf pointed out, you know, food poisoning can be especially severe for young people and older people. They can be especially severely affected by it. And, you know, your caller's talking about HUS or hemolytic uremic syndrome, which is a type of acute kidney injury or acute kidney failure. And there's, you know, three people who've suffered that in St. Louis. We found out about a fourth person in St. Charles County who's also suffered through that. So it's a really, really severe, significant problem people can have with food poisoning.
Jory, you've made food safety the food, the focus, that is, of your career as an attorney. In that work, I mean, what has surprised you most?
You know, it's just how many problems there are in the food safety supply. You know, I'm kind of a terrible person to take out to lunch because, you know, we see all the bad things that happen. And there's just, And it really is tricky because, you know, what was dangerous 20 years ago with E. coli and beef, that is not completely fixed, but is much better now. And now we're seeing so much E. coli in fresh produce that we don't normally cook, so there's no kill step in it. And it's really hard as a consumer to protect yourself from some of the things out there. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a consumer and you're making a salad for your family, and it's got E. coli in it, it looks just like the lettuce that doesn't have E. coli in it. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to know what to do to keep yourself safe in some of those situations.
Right. Well, and on that note, and in the spirit of public service and public safety, we wanted to make sure that we answered some questions because we do want to stay safe. Dr. Wolf, there are a couple of listener questions we've gotten about preparing food in private kitchens. Should raw chicken be washed? No. Okay.
And the reason for that is because mm-hmm. we want to avoid cross-contamination, right? You don't want Campylobacter or a salmonella that might be on that raw chicken breast to then be spread to countertops where you might put your hand and then mm-hmm. you might use your hands to wash lettuce or, you know, cut up an apple.
Right.
So, no, there's no need to do that. Mm-hmm. Just cook it to the right internal temperature.
Yeah. Monica, what's the best way to wash produce? And some people will just run it under the water. I mean, wipe it on a shirt.
Oh, I would run it under your tap water in your kitchen sink.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else, like, should we use solutions to...
I think just tap water is okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I think another thing to note is that, Dr. Wolf, you were talking about the numbers, right? The numbers of people who are affected by food poisoning, and then those who do suffer more serious or deleterious effects. What is it that we should keep in mind?
Yeah, so I think, you know, this story is really important, and I appreciate you bringing it to light, right, and having the multidisciplinary conversation around food safety. And while this can all seem very scary, I think just keeping in perspective that the most people who develop a foodborne illness are going to recover, and they recover even without medical care.
Mm-hmm.
We do want people who have fever, abdominal pain, bloody diarrhea, signs of dehydration, so that child with lethargy, we want you to come to the hospital. The most common thing that we're going to do to support you is oral or IV hydration.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the most important step. There are people that do benefit from a short course of antibiotics, especially if their symptoms are very severe, and that can help mitigate some of the downstream effects like hemolytic uremic syndrome that can happen to people that have suppressed immune systems or are at extremes of age. The death rate is very low. Mm-hmm. So if we think about the sheer numbers of people who are diagnosed every year, I think last year 153 people died of a foodborne illness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tragic. That number should be zero.
Right, right.
But in the scheme of millions of people who develop these types of infections every year, the death rate is low, which means that most people do get better. And if they do seek out medical care when it's appropriate,
mm-hmm.
the medical community can help support them through that illness.
Right. We had another listener ask, when you see a mouse in a restaurant, is that bad? And is it reasonable to expect that restaurants won't have those issues? And I will add here that particularly in places where the infrastructure, the buildings are really old, it can be very hard to get rid of those kinds of pests. So, yeah, mouse in a restaurant, what do you do?
That is a critical violation if I see droppings from mice or if I see a mouse crawl across the floor. So what I would do is tell the restaurant they need to clean everything really well and have someone come in from a professional pest control company. And then we make sure that that gets corrected because mm-hmm. that is, you know, something that we take seriously.
Right. And so what grade would that warrant? Is that a C?
Well, it's not an automatic C. Now, if there was an infestation of mice that was very bad, then that would be a closure. But if it was, you know, more of a minor infestation,
mm-hmm.
we would want them to fix it, and we would give them, you know, usually 10 days to get that fixed. But it's not necessarily an automatic grade drop because
right.
it's worth, everything is worth so many points.
Mm-hmm.
If it was an extreme infestation, we would call that an imminent health hazard, and we would close them for that alone.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different grades of infestations.
Right. So, I mean, it sounds like you are being very thorough and looking at different aspects of what constitutes a place that is health friendly.
Yeah.
Morgan on TikTok had asked, who is at fault for a lax regulations generally? Jory, what do you have when it comes to that?
So regulations are a really important part of food safety. We do think those play a really critical role in keeping all of us safe. And with some regulations, you can see a dramatic impact. So for example, E. coli 0157H7 is an adulterant, which means it's illegal to sell any kind of food with that in it. And as a result, I think the industry tries especially hard to, the food industry tries especially hard to keep E. coli out of products. And so that, you know, labeling certain food pathogens as an adulterant has been a really good thing. The other side of this, though, is, you know, compare food industry regulations to traffic violations. You know, we have police officers who are trying to keep us safe by preventing people from speeding, and that's a really important job, but it's still on people to drive safely. You know, it's still on, and the analogy is it's still on the companies to make sure that their own facilities and what they're doing is safe, so they're giving us safe food. Mm-hmm. And the regulators are never going to be able to catch everything. So it's really important for companies to do the very best they can to try to keep all of us safe.
Mm-hmm. And it seems like there have been a lot more food recalls recently. I mean, is that the case? Or have there been more now than in the past, Jory?
So I think something really interesting is happening with how we detect food poisoning outbreaks. Health departments are now using something called whole genome sequencing, or WGS, which is like a genetic fingerprint to identify connections and links between outbreaks. And I think that is leading to, one, catching food outbreaks faster, which is really good because that means they can identify the source and hopefully stop that outbreak before more people get sick. But because we are catching outbreaks faster, I think we're hearing about more of them. Mm-hmm. But we tend to be hearing about more outbreaks, but they're smaller. And that's actually a sign of progress, I think.
Okay, well, that's a great note to end on. Jory Lange is a food safety attorney. Monica Roth is environmental supervisor and trading coordinator with St. Louis County Department of Health. And Dr. Shefali Wolf is system vice president of quality and safety at SSM Health. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.